from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. More tests are on the way. That was Governor Gavin Newsom's message on Saturday as he announced a new collaboration that he says will lead to greater coronavirus testing capacity in the state.
The testing space has been a challenging one for us, and I own that. And I have a responsibility as your governor to do better and to do more testing in the state of California.
And we'll get the latest then at 9:30 as America moves to online meetings, events, classes. How secure are those Zoom sessions? I'll talk with Washington Post tech reporter Drew Harwell about Zoom bombing and other pandemic privacy risks and how you can protect yourself while socializing online. Join us next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. California lags far behind other states in coronavirus testing, and patients have faced long delays getting results. But California Governor Gavin Newsom said on Saturday that the state had made progress reducing its testing backlog and announced a new collaboration to increase capacity fivefold. Meanwhile, Governor Newsom also highlighted a new antibody test created by Stanford University, which it has started giving to volunteers at three research sites in Santa Clara County. Joining us now to talk about the latest on testing is Rachel Becker. She's a reporter with Cal Matters. And welcome, Rachel.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, glad to have you. I should begin by saying that the governor's task force is being led by Dr. Charity Dean from the Department of Public Health and Paul Makovich, who is president and CEO of Blue Shield. This is a public and private collaboration, essentially, to increase the rate of testing. The governor's talking about fivefold at this point.
Yes, that's right. Although what exactly that means in terms of numbers and what adequate testing would look like in California, he didn't say.
Well, he did say that he's going to have 5 to 7 testing hubs throughout the state, and that's going to increase high capacity testing and end the backlog. But we have the biggest backlog. Well, right now, I think we're 37th or 39th in terms of backlogs, but we have about 13,000 people just waiting for results.
Yeah, the latest numbers are 15,000 people, and that is a big drop from the backlog at peak, which was around 64,000 people still waiting on results. And the drop-off between Thursday and Saturday was pretty huge. It was more than 30,000. The drop-off was from more than 59,500 people still waiting for results on Thursday to around 13,000 on Saturday when the governor updated us. Now it's around 15,000 people waiting for results. So it's still thousands and thousands of people who are still waiting to find out if they've been infected with the novel coronavirus.
But the problem has been to some extent in the testing supply chain, hasn't it? I mean, it's been riddled with shortages. And to what degree do we expect this can really remedy that?
Yeah, exactly. The testing supply chain has really just, it's just been one thing after another. First, the CDC sent out a test that was flawed and gave results that could not be interpreted for some labs. Finally, at the end of February, the FDA gave its okay for labs around the country to be developing their own tests. But since then, the just massive demand for supplies and competition between labs to get supplies to test their respective patients has led to shortages in materials needed to extract genetic material from the swabs that clinicians, you know, plunge really far back into patients' noses. And then we've also seen a shortage of those swabs themselves. And then the just huge influx of tests at the commercial labs have led to a pretty slow turnaround time. The labs say between 3 and 5 days. Hospitals that are sending their tests to outside labs say that the backlog has, the delay has been between 3 and 9 days. We've seen reports of up to 12 days. So it's really been, it's just been one thing after another.
Well, the governor's been talking about the need for data collection. He's taking responsibility for whatever lagging there may be. He said, I own it. And he gave new numbers. What we, I suppose, can extrapolate from this is that we just need to have better data collection. There's a new website that's going to help with that, right? There's resources and supplies that people can essentially weigh in on personally, or businesses can, manufacturers can.
Yeah, there's a new website to kind of address the supply chain issues, including for PPE.
And so what does that mean in terms of the lag? We're going to get commercial labs are lagging as well, aren't they?
Although on Saturday, the governor commended the commercial labs for stepping up and helping address the backlog in results reporting. He also mentioned that an unnamed California county, he said one of the largest in the state, has not been reporting its results in real time, which also contributed to the large number of folks who hadn't yet been tracked as having received their results. The data reporting, though, has been a pretty big issue, to the point where seven Bay Area counties increased their requirements for reporting from labs. Originally, labs were only reporting positive results, which made it hard to track just how many people had actually received the results. And then as a result of that requirement from the Bay Area counties, labs then had to start reporting inconclusive results and negative results as well, which made it easier to track the numbers.
Well, I was noticing some numbers, Rachel. Kaiser, for example, in-house had a turnover within 24 hours of tests, but the tests that Kaiser sends out to outside labs take 3 to 9 days.
That's right. That's right. And some of that has to do with, receiving the sample and then sending it out and then awaiting the lab actually running the sample and then sending the results back out. So it's just the timing really adds up.
Well, I'm going to invite our listeners to join us. California lagging far behind other states in the coronavirus testing. And as we said, Governor Newsom has announced a new collaboration to increase capacity fivefold. And we're talking to Rachel Becker, who is with CalMatter. And you can join us with CalMatters, excuse me. We do want to hear from you. What questions and concerns do you have about accessing tests? You can give us a call right now at our toll-free number. And the number to join us at is 866-733-6786. That number again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have or comments to forum@kqed.org. Here's Vince, who says, if I test positive and don't have breathing problems, I'm told to go home and isolate to save hospital resources. If I test negative, I'm told to go home and shelter in place. If I'm not tested, like most of us, I'm told to shelter in place. What am I missing here? Logical analysis of current policy demonstrates that testing is irrelevant to treatment and behavior of individuals. Rachel?
So I think that it's kind of a nihilistic take. And I've spoken to folks, to counties that are still really relying on testing in California in order to help guide quarantine and isolation procedures. So for example, in Madera County, they're using testing to identify folks who have it, to then recommend that folks who have been exposed or who are positive isolate themselves, which is kind of a different level of restrictions on contacting people than quarantine. That the isolation means, you stay in one room in your house, you disinfect the bathroom every time you use it, you don't go out and expose other people. It could also mean that folks who are sick need to actually be taken into other environments if they live in homes where, or in environments where they can't isolate themselves or they have multi-generational households. So testing is still very important for the public health response in places where containment of the virus, meaning preventing its spread, is still possible. It's true we're seeing community spread in a lot of California, but testing is still really important for understanding, who needs to be monitored, understanding the degree to which people need to be careful of exposing themselves to other people. And it's really, it's a cornerstone of the public health response.
Yeah, indeed it is. And I want to ask you about something else that Governor Newsom mentioned in his talk on Saturday. Stanford Medical School has developed or is in the process of developing a new serological test to see if individuals have developed an immune response to novel coronavirus. And it's on the verge. In fact, Governor Newsom was talking about it's being essentially a game changer and on the verge of being approved by FDA to be authorized. Where are we on that? I mean, he's looking at fast federal approval here, but, how fast is it going to be? He talked as if it was happening within hours almost.
Yeah, Stanford says that more information is forthcoming, but they did tell me they're actually working on two tests, one of which would be for academic studies to track the probably to track the spread of the virus, and one is to be used in the lab. And the idea is that these serology tests, these antibody tests, are really sort of the next phase in testing. So unlike the diagnostic tests that we just talked about, the RT-PCR tests that are backlogged across the country, serology tests don't actually sniff out the genetic material of the virus itself. They search the serum, which is the liquid that carries blood cells through the veins, for signs of the immune response called antibodies. And so that can kind of help tease out who has been infected even after the virus has already disappeared from the body. And so that's going to be really important for identifying, you know, who has been infected. It'll help track the virus's spread, for evaluating how effective vaccines are at provoking that antibody response. And then also just figuring out how deadly the virus really is, what the percentage of folks who become infected do wind up needing the ICU or do wind up dying. There are efforts to develop an antibody test all over the country. UC Irvine has developed a what's called a microarray, where you can test for antibodies against many, many different chunks of different viruses. There are folks at UCSF who are developing a really interesting assay that looks for the ability of antibodies to block the virus from infecting cells, because antibodies are kind of a multi-tool of the immune system. They can target infected cells for killing, they can block virus from getting into cells, and they can target viruses for cleanup by the cleanup cells of the immune system. So understanding the antibody response, knowing how long it lasts, really understanding how protective it is, that all depends on having a good antibody test and a reliable one. And having it be reliable is going to be really key if we wind up using the antibody test to shape public health responses and shape people's behaviors. Because if you have a test that says someone is immune and they're actually not, that could put them at pretty significant risk.
No, it's crucial. And I should mention, we'll be talking to Larry Brilliant in the 10 o'clock hour today, epidemiologist who will give us a lot more information about this. I just want to mention also that Abbott Laboratories, we're talking about this partnership that's public and private, have committed to 75 testing sites and working with 13 hospitals, including Sutter Health and Kaiser Permanente. But let me go to your calls, and let's begin with John from Sacramento. Join us. You're on. Morning.
Hi, good morning. I had a quick question regarding the testing results. Initially, all of the California tests, we were running at about, seems to me, very close, if not above 25% infection rates on the initial tests. But in this latest set of backlog tests, the infection rate is down by just huge statistical amounts, 1 to 2% infection rate. What is the story with that?
Rachel Becker.
That's a great answer, or a great question. I don't have a great answer for that. I think we're still waiting to find out really what the infection rate is, what the false negative rate is with the tests. There's a certain amount of results that will turn up negative if the sampling is not done correctly. You really need to plunge that swab in back to the back of the throat and collect cells. And if you don't get cells, if you don't sample aggressively enough, you're not going to be able to detect the virus within those cells. So that's one scenario that's possible. But I think until we really understand the true spread of the virus, it's difficult to really interpret the infection rate from results that are still coming in.
And I want to remind listeners, we're going up to 9:30 with Rachel Becker of CalMatters. If you'd like to join us, if you have questions, please do so now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or, of course, you can get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions you might have to forum@kqed.org. Here's Sean, who writes, I've read that the World Health Organization had a test for the virus back in January, but the United States did not approve that test for use here. Why not? Can you clarify that, Rachel?
It's a good question. It's an ongoing question. CDC elected to send out its own test. Its test wound up producing, had some issues with showing false.
Yeah, in fact, excuse me, Rachel, for interrupting you, but I think there is now a petition to essentially go after the WHO on this, signed by hundreds of thousands of people. This and other matters that the WHO has been perceived as falling back on. But please finish with what you were saying. I just want to get that in there.
The WHO had published the protocol. So I don't know if I really understand why folks would go after the WHO for the CDC's decision to not use the WHO's test.
Well, that at this point, I think, is something that will have to be ironed out. But let me get another caller on here. And Cynthia wants to join us. Cynthia, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I suspect that I might have had COVID in late December, and I'm wondering if I had a test that showed that I had it but got over it, is there a way I could support others, like with my plasma or my blood, that would contribute to treatment and or vaccine?
Yeah, good, important question, Cynthia. Thank you for it. Let me go back to you, Rachel Becker.
Yeah, if you do wind up getting, when the antibody tests are available, more available to patients, if it does show that you were infected and you have developed antibodies, then there are opportunities to donate plasma. It's called convalescent plasma. It's the liquid that, holds your blood cells, and that is chock full of antibodies. And so there are some preliminary studies to look at whether giving that plasma to folks who are actively infected would help block the virus from entering their cells and help prevent infection from getting worse. It's still ongoing studies. We need really some serious clinical trials to home in on whether the plasma is helping, whether it's the just kind of the combination of other treatments that these patients are getting. But donating plasma is definitely a way that people who have been infected can help the effort. An important thing, though, will be to not, go to blood banks looking for a test, because they're not doing that. But there are opportunities if you search for them to donate plasma. If it was the end of December, though, and you didn't travel, it's possible that what you had could have been the flu, because that was still, pretty peak of flu season. And we didn't really start seeing the first cases in the U.S. until January. But again, a lot of the timing still needs to be ironed out with further studies.
Could you say something, if you would, Rachel, though, about the scarcity of supplies, which I alluded to earlier? I mean, there are low numbers of swabs and clinical reagents. There's fighting over them, certainly competition, if not fighting, between states. What are we seeing, at least on that horizon, for California?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of competition for supplies. We're seeing hospitals looking towards hardware stores for the N95 respirators, the masks that are especially good at filtering out small particles. We're seeing hospitals looking towards elementary schools for sanitizing supplies, and nurses bringing their masks home and storing them in paper bags so they can reuse them if the masks wind up disappearing completely. It's really a big problem that hospitals were not better equipped with PPE, with personal protective equipment, and that we're that it continues is really just mind-blowing. But there, the governor did put up a new website recently to kind of help centralize the search for materials and to help facilitate donations. We've been also seeing supply drives at universities. One lab I spoke to at UCSF, for instance, rounded up all of the gloves and the masks and supplies they'd been using in the lab. And because of the shutdown, they were no longer in the lab, and they donated those to hospitals.
What about the high numbers of asymptomatic people? Where does that figure into this, as you see it?
Well, yeah, the high numbers of asymptomatic people really reinforce the importance of staying home, because even if you don't have symptoms, it means you could still spread the virus to people. And that's why it is so important for everybody who can stay home to stay home. It also reinforces recent guidance to wear masks, not just to protect yourself, but especially to protect others, because it's possible that even if you don't think you're sick, that you could spread infectious droplets just by speaking closely with someone, for instance. So the asymptomatic spread of the virus is important, and it's important to stop that spread by staying home.
We're talking with Rachel Becker of CalMatters. I got a lot of emails here. Let's get to as many as we can. Blake writes, please ask Rachel to discuss whether widespread serology testing might enable those with immunity to go back out in public. And also, does Rachel believe any communities in the United States will achieve population level immunity before a vaccine is approved?
The question of returning to work with immunity to COVID-19 is such an important question. And the fact of the matter is that we just don't know.
We really don't know at this point, do we?
We really don't. The thing is that studies from SARS indicate that antibodies could last, you know, between 2 and 3 years. Studies of coronaviruses that cause more common colds show that antibodies can last about a year, but folks can be reinfected. And so the folks who had antibodies, it was a study in the 1990s. It was a really interesting study. Basically, researchers infected 15 volunteers and then had them come back a year later and be re-exposed to the virus. And they were, 2/3 of them were reinfected, even if they had developed infections in the first place, but their subsequent infections were milder. So it's possible, I mean, in the short term, it's suggestive that antibodies may be protective, but we just don't know how long that antibody response lasts, how protective it is over the long term, and really how protective it is over the short term. There was a study out of Munich of 9 patients who were all exposed to who were all infected by the same individual. And even after they developed antibodies, the viral load, the levels of the virus in their spit and their saliva and their mucus that they were coughing up, it didn't decline immediately. It declined slowly and steadily over time, which means that antibodies aren't a magic bullet. And so I think there's going to really need to be, you know, more research and a lot of caution before saying, like, it's before allowing people to put themselves at risk.
Quick question, because we got seconds left here. Ruth wants to know. She says, I'm concerned that even with more testing, the numbers mean nothing. I have a friend who had 2 nasal swab tests. Both came back negative, but after that, he had to be intubated. They took a bronchial swab that came back positive. So what do these numbers really mean? If it took 3 tests to find COVID-19, does that mean the numbers showed 1 case out of 3 tests?
I'm so sorry to hear about your friend. It does mean that it's hard to really interpret the numbers right now. You know, as we talked about earlier, there is potential for false negative. It could have to do with, you know, where in the respiratory system the virus is hanging out in a given person. It could have to do with sampling. And it really, again, means not relying on the numbers to guide behavior right now. It means just staying home and trying to keep everybody safe.
Boy, there's a note to end this segment on. Rachel Becker, so good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you for inviting me.
It's Rachel Becker, who is a reporter with CalMatters, and we're going to follow this up with some talk about Zoom, and there's a lot of talk about Zoom, about 200 million people using it during this pandemic. But how safe, how secure, what about surveillance, privacy? That's all up ahead. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.